You're listening to Beyond the Jargon, a conversation with graduate students about their research journeys at the University of Victoria. I'm your host, Liz MacArthur.
So my name is Agnieszka Doll, and I am a PhD candidate at the Faculty of Law at the University of Victoria, and I'm in the Law and Society program, so it's kind of a typical program. It's not strict law, but like law in a context of social issues. So my field is mental health law, and I'm specifically looking at the process of admission to mental health facilities in Poland. And my more specific focus is on how lawyers and attorneys engage in the procedures and what kind of impact their engagement has on the outcome of those procedures.
Interesting. So you're looking at how lawyers or how people's mental health is treated in the courts?
Yeah. So the procedure that I'm looking at is like people are involuntarily admitted based on dangerousness and mental health, but they have the right to appeal the admission when they don't agree to it. So I'm looking at the legal procedure of like appeal, of like assessing the legality of the admission itself, and how in the context of this legal procedure, lawyers, usually those are legal aid lawyers, what's the space for them to kind of act? If there's like really space that they can act, and what kind of engagement, you know, they have or can have, and how does it impact the final decision whether the admission was legal or illegal?
How did you come to study this topic?
I was a lawyer in Poland, so I saw that. It was really hard to challenge psychiatrist's opinion in terms of mental health. And it was kind of frustrating because, first of all, these issues were not treated so sometimes seriously by lawyers. So specifically when those cases were legal aid cases. And in Poland, legal aid cases have been in Canada because here in Canada, people can kind of volunteer to become legal aid lawyers, but in Poland, every lawyer is obliged to kind of provide legal aid. And then they cannot even specify what kind of field they would like to provide. So basically, when the court decides that somebody needs assistance, it just appoints a lawyer. So the appointment is very random. So it sometimes like comes for people, like, you know, for lawyers out of blue. And so those cases, legal aid cases, are not always welcome because they are, depends of course on the case, but I'm talking about mental health cases. They are very low paid and they're kind of disruptive to regular practice, lawyer's practice, because usually there is very short time period for preparation for these cases. So they are kind of marginalizing in the practice of lawyers. Not treated so seriously. So this was one thing that I was frustrated as a legal, you know, trainee. And the second thing was that even if lawyers try to engage in those cases and do a very good job, there's very little they can say because they are either cut off by the judges, their voices are not so so much heard. And, you know, they are kind of, their expertise is dismissed because it was said often to me that I have no psychiatric knowledge. So, you know, like on one hand, you do want to do a good job, do the best you can, but then you really can't. And that was really frustrating. So I really wanted to understand, like, how is it? How is the system organized so it allows for this kind of practices?
So even though you were a legal professional, it wasn't necessarily that the person that a lawyer was representing with a mental illness wasn't being heard. It was that their advocate also wasn't being heard on the topic of their mental illness. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What does your research encompass right now? Are you talking to lawyers? Are you talking to people who've gone through legal aid processes?
So I already finished my field work. So I spent in Poland 18, I spent like almost 2 years, but I can consider 18 months for my field work. So I did ethnography. So I spend a lot of time in court and in psychiatric facilities. So I talk with lawyers, I talk with judges, I talk with psychiatrists, I talk with paramedics, all the people who are involved in the process of admission in somehow related to, you know, like all the people who are somehow related to decision-making or providing some kind of evidence or details about the context of admission, I was trying to incorporate in my research. I didn't talk to people who were admitted because I decided to focus on professionals and how, on the professional level, the system is organized. Because the people who are admitted basically are not present in the hearings. They are not even taken to the court to speak, you know, about their situation, about their admission. So they are very, very absent. I haven't seen one single hearing in which a person participated. So that's why I decided to focus on professionals to see how the system is organized on the professional level. So it excludes lawyers, but also, even more importantly, the people who are the most concerned, the people who are admitted. So I conducted about 30 interviews, and I spent hours of observation, participant observation, and I collected mountains of legal documents and legal texts.
And all of your research focused on Poland, is that right? Were you working in Canada as well?
So my research is about Poland, but my postdoc, I'm planning to do a study in Canada because in BC specifically, because BC has a very restrictive mental health law. And so when you compare Poland and BC, Polish law related to mental health is very focused on rights and kind of legal protection. And in BC, lots of decision is made by psychiatric professionals, while in Poland, most of decisions have to be made by courts. So I want to see, you know, how it is it like so different in practice, you know, despite the regulation, how does the practice really compare to in those two countries? You know?
Have you noticed huge differences between the practice, or is it a similar? I mean, you mentioned legal aid earlier. Is that the only thing that sort of differentiates the two?
Oh no, legal aid is it's a very different structure, right? And I would say in Canada, the way it is structured, it's much more, you know, it's better from the perspective of patients, of involuntarily committed people, but also I know that there are lots of like cuts to legal aid, and the advocates struggle with representing people and having enough time to prepare. In Poland, legal aid is perceived as very unnecessary burden by lawyers, you know, because they are not volunteering for it, and they have to do it, in spite if they want to do it or not. And as I said, like there is a huge discrepancy between, for example, tort cases and mental health cases in terms of remuneration, how much lawyers will get for the representation. So it's like 120 times more for example, tort case than for mental health case. So this also puts the mental health cases, you know, at the very bottom of the desirability for those cases. But unfortunately, I haven't studied the Canadian procedure yet per se, but what I've heard, it seems that lawyers are treated here, you know, legal aid lawyers or advocates are treated here in a very similar way. It just kind of perform a presence in the court, you know, to just meet formal standards. So even though the procedure is organized around different principles, it seems that there's like lots of commonalities between those two legislations.
You used to be a lawyer in Poland. When you went back to do your research, you must have had contact with former colleagues. What did they think about the research that you were doing?
they thought it was interesting, but not so, like, you know, they didn't treat it so seriously.
Huh.
They were very helpful. They wanted to participate. They wanted to contribute, but they didn't see, you know, they basically don't see academic research as so appropriate to their, like, everyday life. And more and more I talk with them, because I am planning to share my findings with them and my writings with them. I think, like, because, you know, people have idea about academic research as, like, being very abstract and very theory-driven, and they don't want to engage. But my research is very ethnographic, so I'm starting with a lawyer's experiences. So basically, my first chapter in the research is about describing what kind of struggle lawyers have to overcome to engage in those cases. So hopefully, when they read this kind of, like, you know, writing, they will be more willing to, you know, like, to think about their own practices. But I found this, like, doing conversation, interviews with people I knew or who are in the same profession, and it was very enriching, I think, for both of us, because what I really like in some of this conversation, when the question that I was, like, posing made people think, you know, it's like, actually, no, we don't do the way it was supposed to be done. Or, like, one of the examples was when I asked one of the participants, it's like, why do you have different strategies in advocating for people who are in criminal justice context and mental health context? And I said, like, both of them are going to be, you know, institutionalized. Why do you put more effort for people in the criminal justice context, right? And they said, oh, because it's more important. People are going to be, you know, undergoing punishment. But, like, when you really think about it, both of, like, you know, either person will be, like, institutionalized for a very long time. So the consequences at the end are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, one is going to be charged with the sentence. Other is going to be put in the institution based on the, you know, on the decision of the Mental Health Act. But both of them are going to be spending lots of time. But the gravity in the context of the criminal justice system is perceived, like, you know, it's higher, right? People put more effort. They challenge different issues. For example, in the context of criminal justice, lawyers challenge mental health diagnosis. But in the context of involuntary admission, they don't. They just assume that it's the correct one.
Mm.
Yeah, so then, like, one of the participants, like, you know, was, like, started thinking about, like, actually, I don't know why I'm doing it. Like, actually, you know, so I really think that people who participated and told me their stories, their experiences, they learn from those experiences a lot. But also, I think, like, interviews were good place to kind of rethink those experiences.
Mm-hmm. Are you hoping to go back to a law practice after you have finished your research?
I don't know. I'm kind of tempted. I don't know. I'm, like, torn because I love teaching. So I would like to be a law professor.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, I don't want to be out of touch of practice, you know, because I think people's troubles and struggles motivate me to do my research. And I don't want to do research that is meaningless for people, you know. So I will try to combine. I will see how it goes. I don't know if I will get, you know, academic position, but if I go, if I had a luck and I get the position, I will try to at least work for non-profit and so somehow to kind of engage in advocacy and you know, activist research and participant maybe research, like participant action, participant research. Yeah, I don't want to be just a professor or just a practitioner, because I think in practice, it's also for practice, you know, to kind of change the practice towards better Dr. Ames, it's necessary to think about bigger issues than just working case by case. So I think this academic research is really important. But on the other hand, as I said, I don't think that, for me, academic research is abstract research means anything.
Yeah, it seems like your approach is that the academic research is sort of, and the practice go hand in hand, and the academic research can maybe remedy some of the problems that you run into when you're in your practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What are the next steps for you? You spent all your time doing your, or gathering your information and doing that research, your field work. What's next now?
So now I'm writing my dissertation. So hopefully I will defend next year. So this is challenging. I think that I enjoyed my field work much more than writing my dissertation. But it's kind of also interesting because there are so many threads that I can follow, and then making decision which thread to follow and what kind of, like, you know, evidence to bring. It is inspiring. I like it, but it's just very isolating experience.
Mm.
So, I'm trying to be active in the non-profit sector, and I'm associated with the research centers, because otherwise, I don't want to be an isolated academic writing her own dissertation and, like, not speaking to anybody. So I do try to participate in different projects and these talks and, I don't know, just to talk to people about my research, listen to their feedback about my research. And, one of the talks that I gave last year was really meaningful to me. It was in William Pratt Institute. And, I just realized that this is what it means, you know, like, this is the meaning of which, this is what it brings meaning to my academic path, like, to engage with people about research and the problems and how they see. And, it was a really meaningful experience for me to go there.
What initially brought you to the University of Victoria, all the way from Poland?
Oh, so it was a long path. So I started in the University of California in Davis.
Mm-hmm.
So after I passed my bar exam, I decided that I need to have a break from my practice. And I need to think, you know, about the issues that I observed. So I went, I got a scholarship to University of California to Gender Global Issues program, and I met, like, amazing people there, amazing feminists, amazing critical scholars, and it was like shift in my thinking, like 180, you know, percent. And it was an eye-opening. It was so challenging because, you know, like, they were talking about, like, feminism and all the issues, and I've been never really exposed to feminism. Because in Poland, at the moment when I left, there were, like, not even a program in gender studies.
Huh.
So you just kind of learn from your observation how, you know, the gender dynamic works. But there was, like, I had no idea about what they were talking about, like, you know, all these feminist theories. And so it was difficult, challenging, and but it was also, at the same time, like, really important. And I decided to pursue my PhD. So I applied to different programs I focused more on social justice and criminology, but I ended up in SFU sociology. So I started there, I started in sociology, but then I realized that I'm not really a sociologist, I'm a lawyer. So I switched to UVic Law. And I'm really happy about it because this program in law is amazing. It's very non-traditional and very critical and inspiring. So, this one is another, like, big step in my professional and, like, personal development to be here.
In what ways is it non-traditional?
First of all, it admits people not just who are lawyers. So you don't have to have LLM to be admitted to the program. So what it brings people from different disciplines. Somehow your research needs to be related to law, your previous research, for example, master research, but you can come from, you know, philosophy, you can come from history. So this is not so much maybe practiced in other law schools. And the second, it's a very international. And the third one, you know, those areas of specialization of the UZIC law are very, I would say, radical critical spaces. So there's a huge focus on Aboriginal law, on feminist legal theories, on gender and sexuality, yeah, or like representation in movies, law representation in movies. So, well, not so much about torts and analysis of like legal cases. So doctrinal research, which is almost non-present in the UZIC law. So people do lots of like qualitative studies. The way they engage even with cases, they engage with cases in the context of the society. So not just the law for the sake of law, but to understand how the law functions in the society and is the articulation of the society. So, yeah, it's very critical and open space.
Do you have hopes for your research once you've done your dissertation? Are you hoping that people will take it and sort of rethink maybe the way in which they operate in the court system, or are you just hoping to just contribute to a body of work?
Well, I have to be kind of realist. I hope, you know, that people will start thinking about it, that it's a long way to go, and, you know, the things are really complicated in terms of, like, mental health law and admission to mental health facilities. I don't think that my research will make, you know, huge change in the system. It will show probably one of the small pieces that are not working and how those pieces can be potentially changed. But then also it's important to engage professionals in a way of restructuring, rethinking the system to the way, like, you know, in a way that it's possible. So I don't want to like prescribe any, you know, strategies of reforming the system. I would prefer to deliver my findings and work with them to kind of think what is possible, because I think sometimes the problem with translating academic research into you know, practical terms is that academics have their own ideas what it should be done and how it should be done, and this is simply not possible in the context of specific institutions. Because either there are not enough resources, or, you know, like, there are lots of structural barriers that practitioners have to struggle as well. So, I would like to, I prefer to have a small impact than, like, you know, big ideas. But also, I have to say I'm stressed, when I think about presenting my research to practitioners, because it's kind of critical. It's critical of the system, and it's also critical of lawyers. So I felt more comfortable presenting my research to inmates in William's Head than presenting my research to the practitioners in Poland, but I'm getting ready. I'm getting there, and hopefully I will start sharing my chapters with them and going back and giving some talks. Right now I'm like writing chapters for different publications, activist publications. So that's where I am. But it's for Canada. I'm like really stressed about like presenting the findings in a way that will be, you know, I'm not saying well received, but in a way that people will not, I would like to present my findings in a way that people engage. You know, they may be uncomfortable, and it will be uncomfortable for them to engage, but I would like them to engage, so I don't want to be offensive towards anybody, but just like to provide solid, you know, research that would be, you know, steering them and pushing them to engage in this research. But this is hard to do, to kind of, you know, negotiate this kind of balance.
So I guess your worry is that people might feel like they're being attacked in a way because the research is sort of looking at, well, you know, this isn't a very good way that, you know, people with mental health issues are necessarily represented. Are you afraid that lawyers in Poland will think that it's kind of an attack on the profession and the way that they do their profession?
Yeah, they might think in this way because but as I said, like even at the beginning, my research is not about people, it's more about systems. So I'm not saying, you know, those professionals are not good practitioners. They are working within specific systems, and they are doing sometimes what they are capable of doing in this specific system. But they are also trained in a specific system, right? So their discourse, their embed, like, you know, the discourse, all the knowledge they have, it's not coming from nowhere. It's representing specific system of thinking. So that's what I'm trying to speak. This is what I'm trying to show them. It's not about them. It's about like how the system is contributing to the way the practices are organized. But I do say that some of the professionals are not engaging because they are not. They treat these cases as like, you know, this case is like that there's nothing to kind of even talk about. And this is problematic because each of the cases deserves, you know, attention. But at the same time, I understand that because the way the legal aid is organized, there is no incentive for them sometimes to engage in a case. So I'm trying to also show them they understand how their, like, practices are you know, related to other problems. And right now it's a big issue in Poland about, because lawyers are trying to get higher rates for legal aid representation, and they have a really hard time doing it because the Ministry of Finance is not willing to put more money. So, you know, on one hand, I think that maybe my research can help them to get attention, maybe, or some kind of evidence that is not just about lawyers, you know, gaining more money, but actually it's about the quality of representation that they will be able to provide if they have, you know, if they are remunerated for their work. Because right now, a lawyer in Poland gets about 60 zloty, which is about $20 for the whole mental health case.
Wow.
Which can involve, you know, your hearings, going to the court, reading files, meeting with the client, you know, hours of work, hours of waiting for those hearings, and they get like $20. So I'm not talking about lawyers making huge money on those mental health. They're not even like paid for their time, you know. So hopefully they will use this, you know, my work strategically, and also show, you know, that it's the issue of social justice, really, to get the, you know, the quality of representation. It is related to, you know, to lawyers' work.
All right. And when do you think you're going to be finished, all finished up? I know this is a hard question for grad students to answer sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would like to be done by summer 2016. Uh-huh. At least they submitted.
All right. Well, good luck. And thank you so much for doing the interview with me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Beyond the Jargon. If you're interested in being interviewed, please email cfuvcad@uvic.ca. To listen again, you can find a link to the podcast at cfuv.ca.